podcasters. This is Brooke with Let's Talk Art. Today I'm talking out with Molly Crom of the Men Gallery in New York City. We're talking about the Arturs Vertimanus exhibition, Against the Tragic Wall. It's really dark and really great. This exhibition goes until May 27th. Enjoy! Okay guys, I had no idea what a CRM was. When I found out, I wondered how in the world I've gotten along without it. Well, the answer is, I haven't. A CRM is a technology that helps you improve business relationships. It manages all your interactions with customers and potential customers in a much better way than my former sticky note filing system. It's much more organized. And best of all, it helps streamline your processes and improve your profitability. It gives you access to things like documents, templates, and meetings to increase your productivity. CRM also includes lead flows, which is a quick and simple way to capture and convert site visitors into sales-ready leads. Sound good? It gets even better. HubSpot CRM lets you see everything about your customers in one place, while automatically storing every customer interaction in a tidy timeline. Never go back to digging through a messy inbox or spreadsheet to figure out where a relationship left off. Let HubSpot CRM help your business grow better. And I didn't even tell you the best part. It's free. Just go to the letstalkartwithbrooke.com site, all one word, and go to the Against the Tragic Wall post and click on the links at the bottom. And you'll get some special deals just for Let's Talk Art with Brooke listeners. Yeah.
So let's try.
I'd imagine it's pretty hard to find a quiet spot with all the...
In New York City, yes.
Yes. Yes, for sure. For sure.
Yes.
So
I'm glad you started the blog again.
Yeah, I was...
the podcast.
Yeah, I was having so much fun with it, and I just kind of wanted to make it, see what I could do to make it a little bit bigger. And I'm still kind of working on that, but yeah, I had to get started again because it was killing me not doing it.
So, why is that?
Just because I enjoy it so much, and I think it's... I think it's necessary.
It's interesting because you are sort of paralleling my own inner struggle, because sometimes I think that the gallery business is so time and effort and money consuming that I just need to give up, and it's absolutely impossible to live without it.
Absolutely. That's the thing. And I'm not a curator at all, but I enjoy, I just think people need to know about it. I think there's so many cool galleries and just curators and things like exhibitions like this. I think, people need to know it. And if they're not going to go themselves, I need to bring it to them.
Well, thank you for that.
Okay, so tell me about, is it Arturs Vertimanus?
Oh, cool. Arturs Vertimanus.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Very cool. Tell me about his work. So I was looking at his stuff, and it's so cool. It's so dark, and just it's very melancholy, but I like it.
Yeah. Well, let's start maybe with the title that is... Nothing if not melancholy.
Yes.
So I mean, both the title and the exhibition, really, even most of the curatorial part of it, although I would like to take a credit for it, but the reality is that artist really insisted on his point of view and his vision, both in terms of creating a title and the installation itself.
Right.
And I think to some degree, both the exhibition and the title are really expression of his personal celebration of melancholy, something that you picked up right away. I think he is very open about the fact that this celebration of melancholy stands in opposition to... this pretty frantic pursuit of happiness, one of our liberties, but I think this pursuit of happiness takes a very almost manic, frantic character in our life, very much a disabling quality. Right. And it goes to the point of ignoring or denying the very possibility of despair and melancholy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the title, to some degree, refers to that. On the other hand, the very idea of invoking the Greek tragedy and the Greek chorus,
mm-hmm.
Not maybe directly in the title, but certainly in his explanation of the title, has to do with kind of drawing the people into the state of melancholy and despair, but also allowing them to see that as in the ideal form of art.
Mm-hmm.
So although they are kind of drawn into it, but they are saved from it by that being art, mm-hmm. by that not being kind of a natural part of life.
Right.
I also think that it speaks to a degree. It speaks about something that all the exhibition that I ever curated speak about. and that is the role of art, the necessity of art,
yes,
in our daily existence. And it's precisely in that art saves us from despair without denying it,
mm-hmm.
I think, is one of its necessary roles.
Right.
So that's what the exhibition is about.
Cool. I might be kind of dense here with this, but what exactly is the tragic wall?
So the tragic wall is that Greek chorus as interpreted by Nietzsche.
Okay.
And also to a degree by Schiller, but the artist was really enchanted,
mm-hmm.
By some of the ideas that Nietzsche had about the Greek tragedy and the role of the chorus. And basically, he saw the chorus as a barrier, a wall,
mm-hmm.
between the suffering that it sings about,
mm-hmm.
And the despair that it sings about, and the audience that is immersed in that performance and that suffering, but yet, again, because it's an ideal poetic form, the audience is saved from the actual despair. So that's roughly
right.
how I understood the artist's interpretation of the idea of Nietzsche. It's basically something that I read, and I really love that description, that the Greek tragedy, and particularly the Greek tragic chorus,
mm-hmm.
is a Dionysian drama,
mm-hmm.
That is expressed through the means of the Apollonian art.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that total kind of stripping of all the social masquerade and civilized behavior as in Dionysian drama, but at the same point, it makes it possible to, because it's delivered to an art form, it makes it possible for an actor to enact it and to be perceived as heroes and gods and everybody in the tragedy.
Right. I've heard about the chorus in Shakespeare, but I didn't know that Nietzsche did that as well.
Well, actually, originally, from what I understand, the Greek tragedy was the chorus. There were no actors.
Mm-hmm.
There was the chorus and there was the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And the chorus delivered the tragedy and their own commentaries and their own kind of guidance for the audience. The chorus was the main... was the tragedy, and later, like in the 5th century, I think they added some actors and more actors. And,
mm-hmm.
But the chorus was the main stem of the tragic, of the Greek tragedy, basically,
right.
at the beginning.
Right.
So that is partially why the tragic wall, and then the other part of it is a much more concrete part, where the artist is pinning his object and his drawings against the wall. Uh-huh. They are sort of actually pinned against the wall, and that very kind of simple intuitive action of putting the objects together in a very kind of transient conglomerate of drawings and objects and background, the very act of it is reflected in the title, which is Against the Tragic Wall.
Mm-hmm.
So, which you will see from the installation sets, while one wall is unquestionably tragic,
mm-hmm.
It is positioned against the other wall, right? The other wall is positioned against this one, where some aspects of that daily pursuit of happiness are reflected. I mean, it's full of symbols of wealth and power and government, and it's a large piece that is done in charcoal and pastel, and it has kind of that frantic, crazy, happy, sort of happy quality to it, and it's positioned against that very gray and dark melancholic wall with tragic drawings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What kind of tragic drawings?
Some of them are fairly abstract. There are some who are done in the exact proportion of a dollar bill and positioned together with a black ball and a chain and the letters that make out the word one. There are some that are obviously and concretely tragic because of the figures that are depicted on the drawings. There is a drawing of a ship that looks like it went through a wreckage. So there are multiple images that evoke that sense of melancholy and despair and tragedy, each in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
But they are put together in a very kind of intuitive fashion. They are not, the space does not give you an impression of something that has been designed.
Mm-hmm.
It really gives you an impression of fragility and maybe an accident in this object coming together.
Right.
And maybe the temporary nature of that togetherness.
Mm-hmm.
It also contains a roll of writings that are really a drawing. There is nothing that you can read, but it looks like a writing that cannot be understood or really read. So
it
really created a very mystical, very theatrical space.
Mm-hmm. So is it kind of contrasting happiness and despair?
I think it points, on one hand, at the very existence of this, at the legitimacy of despair.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think that in a contemporary life, being melancholic and being desperate is almost a taboo kind of state of mind.
Right, but everyone does it. Everyone has it. Has those feelings.
Exactly. And so I think it more establishes the legitimacy of the melancholy or melancholy, and also the there is obviously a place for happiness,
mm-hmm.
but the question, it really depends on the definition, on what is it.
Mm-hmm.
That constitutes the happiness. Is it the symbols of being happy or of being content? Is it the state of mind that cannot be reproduced on a daily basis, although that is the race, in a way, that is the constant, really, the constant race to be happy.
Right,
or the happier than the other.
The pursuit of happiness.
Exactly. The pursuit of happiness. Again, it's the liberty, but I think it's been grossly misused lately.
Right.
So.
Well, you mentioned the symbol of happiness. What is that?
Well, the drawing, I'm talking about the artwork that is filled with what I interpreted as symbols of that happy life. So there is a bag with money.
Mm-hmm.
There is a skull that is adorned with decorations,
mm-hmm.
As in denial of death.
Mm-hmm.
There is a fat man there referring to gluttony. I mean, the images are not, they're semi-abstract, but they're unquestionably there.
Right.
There is a drawing of dolphin jumping for the ball. So all this kind of familiar images that in our mind came to be associated with some level of happiness.
Right.
Because, and I also think that I wonder if the question what you are asking really is, how can you depict happiness?
Yes, yes.
Really? Yeah. And I think the answer is you cannot,
yeah, that's,
in my
that's,
opinion.
That's a good answer.
I think you be... Pardon me?
That's a good answer. I like that.
Yeah. But I think you are breaking off, Brooke.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said I think that's a good answer.
Yeah. So, but I also think that... there is an idea that a presence of sadness, presence of melancholy, if you wish, does not exclude the other state.
Right.
And I think that is a very important message. If I wouldn't be so much against the messages in the exhibition, I would say that is a very important message.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you can have one without the other. You have to have both to really appreciate, if appreciate the other is the right word, but I mean, I know when you encounter despair, it makes you really appreciate being happy or happiness a lot more. And being happy makes you dislike being dislike despair more. So I mean, I think you have to have both to kind of function.
Yeah, well, there is also this very famous saying that, you know, when it's enough, when you experience what's more than enough.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty much that idea that without experiencing one, you really will completely miss on the other.
Right. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
So,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, so this just opened.
Yes, the show opened on May 5th, which was Saturday, and the opening was very well attended, and the space is really quite liked by people who come to the gallery, and it runs through May 27th.
Right.
So, we are open on Saturday and Sunday.
Cool.
From 12 to 6, and we are planning to be open on Friday for this month. We'll see how it works. It's, we are in a part of the Chinatown that is a bit removed,
mm-hmm.
from the main gallery scene,
uh-huh.
although that is changing because we have several galleries opened on the same street.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of them is Sleep Lab and then Essex Flowers, and they are very strong gallery spaces. So that is wonderful, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But still, we need to really make this gallery block known to art lovers because it is a little bit off the beaten path.
Yeah.
So, but I think the space is well-liked and becoming more popular. We were listed by New York Times as the 10 spaces to be seen on the Lower East Side.
Congrats. That's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. It was wonderful. It was in association with the Alan Williams show.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Just closed. Yes.
We did a podcast with Enrique.
Yes, exactly. And so that was very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice endorsement. And so we hope that people will come and see this show. It certainly is a very strong exhibition, I think, both in terms of content and the emotion that it brings with it, and the strength of each individual artwork.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, because if I'm getting it right, it's an installation with charcoal drawings pinned to it. Is that right?
Yes. So the artist is somewhat obsessed with charcoal.
Yeah.
And
not a bad thing.
And the exhibition consists of installation that includes multiple charcoal drawings and three-dimensional drawings, as well as let's call them objects or sculptural objects that consist of charcoal drawings that are enclosed in the plexiglass boxes,
mm-hmm.
with other found objects in it, including charcoal dust and the rubber powder. So they stop being drawings, they become sculptures.
Oh, that's really cool.
Objects. And in addition, there are pieces with writings and just simple drawings that are two-dimensional drawings,
mm-hmm.
and cutouts of the tar paper that sort of look like a writing, but it's not, that really becomes a paper sculpture.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow.
So it's quite a saturated, for a small space, it's a very saturated exhibition.
Yeah.
In a good way. It doesn't overwhelm you, but it certainly is saturated with various uses of charcoal.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Well, I was curious, and this might be a stupid question as well, but what is a three-dimensional drawing?
Well, it's a drawing that is formed to become a shape. I would have to send you an image of some of them. But it's a charcoal drawing, mm-hmm. that is molded into a shape.
Huh.
So it's not a sculpture per se. It's not anymore a two-dimensional drawing. So the artist calls them three-dimensional drawings.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
So that's what they are. Most of them are abstract shapes.
Right.
But, you know, like with any abstraction, sometimes they deliver the message, or they allow your imagination to discern the message better than some more concrete images.
Uh-huh.
So these are the three-dimensional drawings.
Huh. That's really interesting. I can't quite picture that, but is it kind of like, I've seen people do shading, so it kind of looks three-dimensional or two-dimensional.
No. It's the paper that is molded into a shape.
Oh.
Whether it's hexagonal shape, whether it's a more kind of concrete shape of a boat, but not a boat itself. But the best way I can describe it, it's really a molded charcoal drawing.
Okay. I think I'm getting it. I got a picture. I don't know if
I think the image will help.
I've got an image in my head. I don't know if it's right. It sounds really interesting. And I really like his stuff.
Yes. I mean, he usually worked, Arthur Whitman is usually works in much larger spaces.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of jokes about it, as you can imagine. And he made a number of wonderful large-scale installations. Like one of them that I particularly love is called To Perish in Fantasy, and it's a life-size shipwreck object that he created using charcoal drawings and paper only. So it looks like a formidable, huge wrecked ship, but in reality, it's this fragile paper object that is a life-size ship. It looks incredible. I cannot. It really blows your mind.
Wow!
And he also was recently in 2017. He exhibited in Beijing Xindong Space for Contemporary Art, and there he used this indecipherable drawings with rubber powder on the floor, and the space was absolutely magnificent, and the overall impression from that installation is quite strong. He had an installation called Fucking Times with something that he uses in this exhibition as well. And these are the letters that are done in the New York Times font.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically he works a lot with this three-dimensional drawings. Molded into different shapes, and his installations are just phenomenal.
That sounds awesome.
He's great, and he currently has an exhibition in the State Museum in Latvia, which is really a big honor to be included in that exhibition. And his installation is called Bridges of No Return, and it features a kind of image of a bridge that was destroyed by Germans in 1945 as they were leaving the city.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a mixed media bridge made with paper, but also mirrors and wood and other elements. It's really quite beautiful. It just opened, I think, a week and a half ago.
Wow, that sounds really great.
It's a very, it's a show that really attracted a lot of attention. He's very happy with that as well. So a lot of things are happening for him.
Yeah. Now, did you guys know each other in Latvia?
No. I think, I cannot be sure, but I think we belong to slightly different generations. No, I left Latvia long before him.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't know him until we met at the Art Critics dinner party.
Mm-hmm.
And then it followed by a number of studio visits and really researching his work, and then working together on the theme of this current show, and arguing back and forth. Because as I said, in this particular show, my imprint is minimal, and most of the curatorial work was really done by the artist himself.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's pretty cool.
I'm very happy with the result.
Yeah.
You know, so
was it tough to kind of give up control like that?
Brooke, you're breaking off again.
I'm sorry. Was it kind of tough to give up control like that?
It's a very individual thing, I think. For me, yes.
Yeah. I think it would bother me.
I didn't do it without a fight. So, but I really, you know, it's when you give up control and the result doesn't meet your expectations, it's very easy to feel kind of secretly happy about that.
Yeah.
But in this particular case, I have really nothing to complain about because the outcome really exceeded all my expectations. I mean, I was worried about the artist dealing with a small space, and I was worried about saturating the exhibition with meaning and message, and I was worried about, I mean, a lot of things. But really, the outcome is excellent. I mean, I'm very, very happy with what happened, and I'm glad that I was wise enough and strong enough to give up that control.
and that's a huge thing. I think that's a true sign of security to be able to, you know, pass, you know, just give up control. I think that's huge.
Yes, I mean, we can interpret it as security or being tired of fighting.
That too.
No, I probably shouldn't joke like that on the podcast. I cannot help myself. But whatever it was, I'm glad it happened.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Cool. Well, this has been so great. Thank you so much for fitting me in. I really appreciate it.
It is my great pleasure, and I look forward to listening to your podcast again and again.
Awesome, awesome. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And if you could share it as much as you can on your social medias and your website and stuff.
Yes, and we'll continue to share some installation shots, and I do hope that as many people as possible will see the show. It's worth it.
Yes, yes, it looks fantastic, and I'm just really upset that I'm in North Carolina. I can't go to see it, but
I think we talked about it many moons ago. When you covered the exhibition at Prada Gallery, The Beautiful Liars.
Yeah, yeah.
And even back then, the decision was made that one day you'll come to New York.
Yes. Yes, I have to at some point. Yes, we did decide that.
Okay. Cool. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. This was so great.
Doing it. Okay.
Absolutely.
Take care.
I'll talk to you later. I'll be in touch.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much to Molly Crom for chatting with me about the Against the Tragic Wall exhibition. The exhibition goes until May 27th. This has been a Hotspur Media production.